Hi, Nicholas Cole. How are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you, Miss Monica?
Miss Monica is doing well. Thank you for asking. I thank you for joining me this afternoon. I appreciate it. I know you're very, very busy. So thank you for giving me a little bit of time.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I always love doing these interviews. You know, it lets people know what's going on. So I'm glad to be here.
Well, let me begin by saying that from my personal perspective, that you are an incredibly gifted and blessed young man, first of all.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I know you've said that you're just the vessel that God chose. And I admire the fact that your music is created from that place and that you even that you know that.
Yeah, it's important, you know, for other people to know that about me, too, that's how I feel, you know, because I think a lot of, you know, artists get caught up in self-glory and they forget, you know, who it really comes from. So I always like people to know that, you know, that I'm just a vessel that he chose and, you know, he's my center.
That's phenomenal. That right there sets you apart, aside from your gift. That sets you apart, and that's a plus. That is a major, major positive, because without everything else, that he's gonna be there.
Oh, that's right.
So that's beautiful. Knowing that you've been charged with such responsibility, Nicholas, how does that affect your approach to music making?
I'm very careful in how I use the gift. You know, I love so many different styles of music, and everything I hear now, you know, especially the new stuff that's coming out, and, you know, whatever, everything is so different now from just 5 years ago. And I really try to approach my music by just, you know, asking God, you know, what's next. And, you know, when he lets me know, then I go about approaching it the way he told me. And I still get out, you know, every day from, you know, Lady Gaga, Beyonce, who else? One Republic script, you know, a whole bunch of different people. But at the same time, you know, I'm constantly asking God, you know, what should I do next? So, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Well, sounds like you you don't mind the exposure, and which is a good thing because diversity is very important. But you found and you know how to go back to where it all started and figure out, okay, where order my steps, you know, where do you want me to go, which is once again will keep you on top.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, people don't realize that, but that's the truth, you know. And, you know, I never want to be one of those artists that people, like fans will say one day, oh, he done forgot where he came from, you know. He forgot his humble beginnings. And, you know, I never want that to be said about me. So I definitely have to keep, you know, in mind that God is always the center and keep him first in everything.
Very, very good. Very, very key. You've been called the next generation of urban jazz. So what kind of responsibility has that placed on you, if any? Or do you feel any extra pressure knowing that others view you in that light?
Well, yeah, it's a lot of responsibility, and it is a lot more pressure, you know, that people view me that way because people are always looking for me to top what I did, you know?
Exactly.
Journey 1 came out in 2010, you know, the expectation for the next one wasn't as high, but after I did that one, you know, for whatever I produced for anybody else, you know, people's expectations were like, okay, I know he's got to come hard, I know he's going to come hard for this one and do something better than what he did last time, so if I disappoint them, then, you know, I've let everybody down, so expectation really is high, you know, I got to really, you know, stay fresh and keep something coming new all the time, you know, to keep the people on their feet and still feel the same way about me 2 years from now that they do right now. So, it's a lot of responsibility, but, you know, hopefully I'll make it through it.
You will. You will. You're well centered. You will. And you've been playing piano and keyboard in church since you were four. And of course, that's where a lot of people get their start is at church. And I always tell artists that you land yourself in any good church with some good music, and you can find the most outstanding musicians you will ever want to hear.
Oh yeah, I'm telling you, that's where the best come from.
I agree.
The best musicians come from the church. I mean, look at even some of the artists, you know, singing artists, whatever, James Brown, I mean, Sam Cooke. Some of the best come from the church, and I think that training is better than any training anywhere else. Because it really teaches expression and feeling in the music. I mean, it's one thing to know how to read a chart or, you know, how to do everything technical, but to actually feel music, that can't be taught.
Exactly. Exactly. You're right.
That's a feeling that comes from a higher power. And being in church, you know, that's that higher power right there. And it's just a feeling you get with that whole experience, you know, and just being in the service alone gives you a feeling of just being refreshed, you know, and it comes through your music. It really does. It comes through your music. So while you're sitting over there on that organ Sunday morning, you know, you're getting something totally different than what anybody else is getting in a jazz club or a classical concert, you know.
Totally. 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 You're absolutely right. So is it safe to say that you've always known this was what you were born to do?
Yeah, I think it is safe to say that. I knew I would be a producer one day. You know, the artist thing kind of happened out of people just really wanting me to do a jazz CD because everybody in my local town knew that's what I was really into. You know, even though I played at church, I was really into jazz music, so people's like, man, you gotta do a record, you know, you should do a record. I was like, well, no, I don't really know, I just wanna produce for other people. But I figured, you know, with me not being known at the time, you know, mm-hmm. the best way to let people hear what I can do is to do a record for myself. And so I did get production work out of that, but at the same time, I had to keep being an artist because, you know, people wanted me to come out with another record. And more people in the, you know, jazz world got hip to it. And, you know, like you said earlier, you know, that expectation was high and, you know, people, you know, were asking me to do it again. So now I'm in it, you know, deep, and it's too late to turn back now.
Oh, it's too late. Oh, no, there's no turning back for you.
Yeah, too late to turn back now.
Too late. So your father, Leon Cole, has been very influential in your music since the beginning, Nicholas. How has it been working with your father in a business capacity?
Oh, it's been great. I love it. I love every day of it. Well, he's the one that got me started on jazz music. A whole bunch of music, period. People don't know this about my dad. A lot of people don't, but he listens to everything. So that's why I started listening to everything. My dad even has favorite songs of Lady Gaga, and he listens to Toto and the new rising artist on the pop scene now called Matt Kearney. And we listen to it. We discover a lot of this music together. So, you know, he's been a major part, you know, with me, you know, having a lot of the influences that I have. And even in a business sense, it's been really great. Because I want to say he was a business major, you know, in college. So, mm-hmm. You know, he has, you know, good business skills, and I really love working with him.
That is that's good. That you can maintain that those two relationships, keep them separate, but at the same time, you know, do what you have to do.
Right, definitely. I agree.
And that's definitely balancing that.
We're good. Yeah, we're good with separating the relationships. You know, when I need dad, he's dad. When I need Leon, my manager, that's who he is. So,
I like the way you said that.
Yeah, you know, and some people don't know how to separate it. That's why it doesn't end up working, you know, in a lot of, you know, family relationships when it comes to business, because people don't know how to separate the relationships, you know. When I need my dad, that's who he is, you know. So I'm glad we do know how to separate it.
That's wonderful. So you decided to go to Berkeley. Is this true?
Oh, did I?
Are you? Did you? Are you going? Tell me.
You know what? There's a lot of speculation out there about that.
Ooh, tell me.
And I get asked that in a lot of interviews. People say, oh, so you're in Berkeley now. I asked that. I'm like, well, no, I'm not in Berkeley.
Did you notice? I said, see, so you are going. See, you see, I didn't say.
I guess people think that too, but I don't know. You know, I'm not really sure right now. I still really haven't made a decision on that. Berkeley has always been one of those schools that I always thought I would maybe go to.
Mm-hmm.
Then as I got older, I wasn't really sure. I started, you know, doing this music thing, and, you know, I've been getting a lot of work in the field that I wanted to get work in, and, you know, I figured that's what I was going to go to school to do. And since I'm doing it,
right.
I'm not sure at the moment, but, you know, if I go, it really is going to be to learn. It's not going to be because I need work in music production, because I'm getting work right now. So if I go, it's going to be really to learn, because I'm never going to get to the place where I can't learn anything else, because I say this in almost every interview, if I get to that place, then music is going to get very boring for me. If you know everything, then everybody's pulling from you, and you have nothing else to learn, then you've accomplished everything, right?
It would seem.
It would seem, you know, so I don't ever want to get to the place where I know everything there is to know about it, so I don't know. I'm not really sure right now, but it could happen. It could happen.
Well, this is a sidebar, but it's in unison. I guess you get asked this question too. How did you, or where, because I am amazed at your level of maturity and you're so well, it would seem that you've been doing this for probably 20 years to me. I mean, really, just in talking to you and never, if I had never heard anything you've ever done and I just talked to you, I would really assume very easily that you have been doing this for a very long time.
Oh, wow.
You seem so, first of all, we know that you were given this. This is who you are. And that shows, but just your level of intellect and maturity is just, it is amazing.
Well, I personally feel that, thank you for saying that. I really do appreciate it. I think that when God gave me the gift, though, He gave me the maturity to go along with it, because a gift such as this without maturity, you know, I mean, you can really do stupid things to mess it up for yourself.
Very so, true. Very true.
Yeah, it really takes, and you see it every day.
Yes.
Hip hop. You know, there's a lot of youngsters that's out right now that they got it at an early age and they didn't have the maturity to go along with it. So now, you know, they're drug addicts. They got kids everywhere, and this city and this city and this city and this city. And it really takes maturity, you know, to be able to say no to things that will have you perceived in a bad light, you know, later on. So. I truly believe He gave me maturity with it, and I'm glad that He did, you know, because if it wasn't for maturity, then, you know, I probably would be in a whole bunch of mess now that I shouldn't be in, you know.
And it doesn't hurt to have Leon.
No, it doesn't hurt to have Leon.
It doesn't hurt to have Leon right there saying, okay, now, look at here.
Pull it in.
Yeah, reel it back. I like Leon. Just that name alone, Leon. I mean, the name Leon is just one of those names you just know not to mess with it. Somebody named Leon, I don't think.
Yeah,
we all
know.
So, you were signed to Cut More Records, correct?
Right. That's right.
And did that change the course of your personal goals and how you plan to achieve them? Or was it just a bridge linking your aspirations to reality?
Well, yeah, I think it was definitely that bridge that was, you know, linking everything together. It's a label that when I, you know, was growing up listening to jazz, I didn't really know it existed. I didn't really know about a lot of the labels. in jazz. You know, I knew more of the mainstream, you know, mm-hmm. Columbia Records, Atlantic,
Sony.
Warner Bros. Yeah, Sony, mm-hmm. and even though Warner Bros. Had a jazz division at the time, but I didn't really know about the jazz labels. I just knew about my favorite artists. You know, when you're a kid, you don't really think about labels. You just think about who's your favorite artist. So
exactly.
So when I first started hearing about the label, it was probably around like 2009, 2010, maybe, and I didn't think any label would really be interested in me, to be honest, because. On my first CD, I was really expressive and didn't really try to fit for what I thought people would want. I was doing what I wanted to do, you know,
exactly.
What I like.
Exactly, right, right.
And I still make my music that way, you know, because before anybody else likes it, I have to like it myself.
That's
so, you know, I was really expressive on the first CD, and I pulled it back in a little bit on the second one, but I still gave what I wanted to give. It was just that I was feeling something different at the time. It all depends on how I'm feeling, you know. So I didn't really think anybody would be interested in signing me, and I didn't really think I would be interested in signing with anyone, but it's just the timing was right. They were, you know, offering what I needed at the time, and, you know, I was offering what they wanted and needed, so... I think it was just a perfect fit, you know. I'm glad that I went that direction because, you know, it has really brought me more work in production, which is my ultimate goal, you know, in music is to, you know, be that guy, you know, the music producer guy. So even if I couldn't be an artist, you know, 2 years from now, even if my time was up with that, you know, I would still be making music for other people, so... Which I'm not saying. I don't want to scare anybody. I'm not giving, you know, being honest. Yeah, I gotta
thank you for that clarification, please.
Yeah, I had to clear that up. You know, I'm not stopping that. I'm just saying if that were the case, you know, I would still be making music, you know, for other people. But I'm glad that I'm doing it with the label. Well, they're really just great people. And, you know, they have had an influence on, you know, how I make music, but in a good way, you know, not the typical... You have to make music how we say music, how we say to make the music, and if you don't, well, then, hey, you know, you can leave.
Exactly.
It's not a situation like that at all. You know, we're all really loving people, and it's you know, I'm really glad to be with them. It's great.
Well, so you are a composer and a producer, which is, like I said, which is where you are headed, and I wonder if most people know that that is really... ultimately what you, the number one thing you want to do, not, you know, not to ever stop doing what you're doing now, but to ultimately, producer, be, like I said, be the man, that man, the man, period.
I'm not really setting out to be the man. Yeah. I don't really want to be the best. I used to say I wanted to be the best when I was like 14, maybe, but my thinking changed.
What did you know at 14? Right.
Right, you know, what does any kid know at 14?
Totally.
I was just talking out of my head. I want to be the best producer to ever live. Mm-hmm. I want to pass Quincy Jones and David Foster and, you know, whoever else there is out there that's my favorite. You know?
Shoes to fill. Those are shoes to fill.
But... I don't want to ever be the best because I still want to look up to those people, you know, the same way 10 years from now that I look up to them now, you know. And I always want to see them as the best in my eyes, you know.
Right.
And so I don't think I ever want to be the best. I just want to be in that number, you know. I want to be known as,
yes,
you know, Nick Cole, the guy that produces really great music. And music that surpasses all time, you know. So I do want to make music like that, but I don't have to be the number one best producer in the world. You know, I don't have to be that guy.
Okay, well, now I'm going to give you another title that, of course, I got to just add it to the rest of the titles I've given you today. Now, that's very humbling. That makes you a humble, noble man to say that, because you're saying but wait a minute, you know, those that I admire and those shoes we're talking about filling, no, those shoes are those shoes, and those shoes will forever remain those shoes, and I always will respect and look up to those shoes. So that right there, exactly. That's very humbling. That's
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's so many guys I look up to, just about every, you know, genre of music. You know, every genre has their producer that's really the man in that genre. You know, Robert John Mutt Lange was one of my favorite pop producers. You know, I can't even imagine myself being bigger than him and people saying, oh, you're better than Robert John Lane. You know, come on, man.
You were here, Nick. You're here, you know, to be Nick. You're here to do Nick. So yeah. You don't have to, exactly. You don't have to worry. You are here to do what you were put here to do.
Right.
And that's and that's good enough, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree. I totally agree. Well, some other great artists like Brian Culberson and Brian Simpson and Peter White, those that we all love, you consider to be influences, and you're able to infuse some of their styles when you're playing your own. But now this is what I want you to tell me. How do you distinguish yourself or create a sound that is uniquely yours? While you play around and do some of those infusing some of those artists, and how important is that to you?
Well, yeah, you know, I think in me doing my records, I want people to hear who I've looked up to, and I also want people to hear that, you know, I'm doing something fresh and new and something that is different at the same time. I'll give you, you know, little hints of, you know, who I've listened to in some of my music. And, but it, like I said earlier, you know, too, it all depends on how I'm feeling at the time. And, like for this next CD, I'm doing something totally different. I'm giving you stuff from some of my favorite, pop producers, you know, like sounds from letting you know who some of my influences are in that. And
okay.
The people who know those producers, they'll know, you know, oh, okay, yeah, you listen to Dr. Luke, or you listen to Timbaland, or you listen to David Foster or Polo the Don. You know, people will know that in this next record, you know, Lex Luger, whoever. So, you know, I don't think that you'll just hear, you know, for the next record, oh, he listens to Peter White, or he listens to Simpson or Culberson or Norman Brown, or, you know, whoever, Foreplay. So it's just, I always want people to, you know who my influences are, and, you know, you'll also hear me in there, you know, because now, since I've done the two CDs, when people hear the stuff now, you know, they are starting to begin to tell the difference, to be able to tell the difference when they go back and listen to some of my influences, older records or new stuff, and then listen to mine, they can say, okay, yeah, I see what those differences are.
So you are diverse. And that takes skill to be able to jump. Well, not jump, but to be able to create music, that is similar to this genre, yet turn around and create a whole nother project based on a different genre. Yet you're still maintaining Nick in the midst of it all.
Well, yeah, I'm just gonna go on record to say that, you know, since jazz is in the state that it's in right now, like, what do I have to lose? So why can't I do what I love and do what I want to do? You know, not worrying about if I lose 100 million fans.
Oh,
those people aren't there right now. I mean, let's just be honest and call, you know, stay with
It's. It's funny, I read something like that. I think it was yesterday I was reading. Another artist said something about, you know, the world of jazz and the diminishing world of jazz, which makes me very, very, which makes me, it saddens me to even think that because. It saddens me because if, you know, I too like all genres of music. I think if you're not exposed to, I mean, you have, if you love music, then you love music. And I'm speaking Sting, I'm speaking Swing Out Sister, I'm speaking Ray Charles. I mean, you have to, Bono, U2, Aerosmith, you know, Kiss, Gene Simmons, you know, you have to that's if you're a real musician. You and I'm a vocalist, so I truly, you know, I love music. So it saddens me when I hear jazz artists say that, and it's like, you don't say that. Don't say it, because you know. But you see it in a different light. I mean, you're in a position to see it much differently than a fan, so to speak, would be, because you know the numbers, you know, differently than I would sitting at a jazz festival.
Because I experience it every day. You know, I look for that stuff. I look for what the numbers are, and you know, for what the regions are that are the biggest in the genre, you know, and I see how it has, you know, fallen off. But see, mind you, too, maybe my I don't care spirit is a little different than someone, a Peter White or a Culberson or a Kurt Whalen. Those guys were in it during a time where it was booming, and they had, you know, they had a lot of fans. I mean, big, and they still do. I'm not taking anything.
Yeah, they do.
Same fans they had back then, but nobody knows how to find their music other than online. So, you know, without there being the radio stations there and, you know, a lot of the places that they used to be, hearing that stuff anymore. So you imagine that they feel the same way I do? Well, no, because see, when I came in, it was like this.
Okay, you're right.
So it's not like I have had the perks of being a top-selling jazz artist and having a platinum record. I haven't seen those days. So I can say, okay, I'm just going to make a record and do what I want to do. Like, I don't care, you know, which I care, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, like, I got you. I feel you.
I don't feel the same way as those guys. Like, those guys, you know, might say, okay, I want to, I'm just using them as an example. I'm not saying they actually do it, but hypothetically, let's just say one of those guys say, okay, I'm going to make music the same way I made it 20 years ago because it was booming then and it got me the fans I had then, so it can still do it now. Well, hey, maybe not.
I don't know. I beg to differ, because it won't.
Maybe not. And see, you agree with me.
It won't.
So, it won't. It just won't. I mean, pop music back in, I know I keep making references to pop.
Yes, you do, and I'm going to have to figure out what that's about, but anyway, go ahead.
I'm just a fan, you know, of great pop music, and not just, I'm not talking about like teen pop, Katy Perry.
Right.
I mean, that stuff is cool too, but I'm talking about like what pop used to be, with Whitney Houston and Michael Jackson and stuff.
Yes.
Back then, the music was made a lot better, you know, lyrical content and everything, and it has changed, but it hasn't fell off, has it?
Oh, I can think, can we agree that I don't think it ever will? Because if I can see a boy band, and I just can't even think of the names of, I mean, I look at TV and I'm like, who are you? Where did you come from? And you won't be here but 10 seconds. Who are you? But the flip side of that is you get a pop band or pop female. They're coming up. It's like every week I look on TV and Good Morning America somewhere, and there's a new group that I've never, I don't care if they come out of Britain, wherever, who are you? And seriously, and your album is the first day and you're like, so how many, who are you? You know, it's amazing.
But even in that, like, even though some of these bands won't be out for 10 seconds, it's still giving the listener something fresh and new to hear all the time. They're not hearing just one style for 10 years and it doesn't change.
Well, now you're right. You're right.
Well, see, I love jazz. I mean, I don't think there's too many people that love jazz more than me. But, I mean, I've been hearing the same style since 1995. I'm just sorry, but I'm just going to be real in the interview. Like, I've been hearing the same style from a whole bunch of people since, I mean, forever. You know, and it hasn't really changed much, you know.
Same
style I heard from one artist in 97 is the same style he or she is doing in 2013, and probably will be doing the same style in 2014. So.
Okay, well, let's see if you find this interesting. A lot of those artists, not a lot of them, well, let's just say a handful of them started in genres or behind bands that were pop, that were R&B, Morris Day, like backing up people like Morris Day, George Clinton. I can just go on and on with the list of bands that these artists that are now budding phenomenal, I love to death jazz artists that before they were ever who they are today were behind and in the background behind R&B bands and funk and P-funk and pop. Okay, so how about that? So interesting, huh?
Yeah, that's very interesting. You know, I just want to hear something, different. Like, that's why I'm, and I don't exclude myself from the, from the conversation. Like, even for, this third one, I want to do something different that is not really being done right now. And, when I think of stuff that's different now, I think of, like, Robert Glasper.
Yes.
I mean, oh, my God, like, the stuff that dude is doing, that's different. That's something you didn't hear in 1995.
Have you heard Greg Reporter?
Greg Reporter.
I'm going to need you to YouTube that when you get off this phone. YouTube Greg Reporter. He is a new jazz artist, but he's a singer. And he's different. He is so, he set himself apart out the gate. Out the gate.
Oh, wow.
So I need you to check that out. But that we'll talk about that in a little while. Okay. All right, Nick.
Yeah. Okay. I want to check him out. I'm definitely gonna check him out.
Yeah. Right, yes. Pull that up.
Another one who I really love is doing something different is Estelana Spalding.
Yes.
What she's doing right now, you didn't hear it in '97. You know, so it's just different. You know.
Well, I see that you are definitely. I can see why they call you the next generation, because you know what it is? It's the way you think. It's your thinking that is the next generation. And that's what it is, because you're thinking, it has to be, because you're thinking not like they're thinking, because like you said, they're thinking, let me do what I know works. Let me keep in mind that I'm in 2013, and keep up with the times, but I'm going to stick to what I know works, because I've done it for 10 years and 15 years and it's worked. Let me go totally in a different direction, but still maintaining my integrity to who I am.
Yeah, and see, that is all I'm saying. Like, you can still, have your style, but change it up a little bit. I know that sounds crazy. I mean, you can have your style, but change it. But, I mean, you know what I mean? Like Timbaland, he had a certain style back in 98 that still sounds a little sort of the same, but it has changed in such a way that makes it different from back then. You get what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
So it's a new, fresh twist on it, but you can still tell when you hear it that it's Timbaland.
And that's the mark, and that's the signature of timelessness.
Right.
And that's what you're after, correct? I mean, that's what you want.
Yeah, correct. Even on down to like the album covers. I don't want the album covers like from here on out to look like the same typical jazz album covers.
Well, it's funny you say that, because your photos do not. I honestly, I looked at them and I said, let me choose a couple of these to use. And then I said, none of them are you. You would not look at this photo and know that this young man does this. You just would not, except for that one where there's like a piece of a Yamaha keyboard, a small piece of it, that, and even that doesn't say anything,
Right.
So interesting you say that, because yeah, you nothing I saw told me you were a jazz artist. If I didn't know who you were.
And the only way I'm not going to be different in my approach to that kind of stuff is because I might not have $10,000 to spend on something different.
Right, right.
That's the only way I'm not going to be different in the approach to that kind of stuff. But if I can help it, it's got to be different, because it catches the eye, and the music catches the ear if it's different, so I mean, it just got to change, you know. It's been the same for too long.
I'm gonna start calling you next generation.
I appreciate that.
Because that's where they get that from. Oh my goodness, it's coming all together. I want to know that. Okay, now when you're performing and you're on stage and you're in front of thousands of people, or you're in front of hundreds of people, or wherever, are you thinking about connecting with your audience in a special way and creating a bond with them?
Well, yeah, like, you know, after almost every song or after every two songs, I'm having a conversation with the audience, you know, so I definitely want to make them feel a part of the show and a part of not just the show. It's bigger than a show with this. Like, I want everybody to know what I'm about to say. It's bigger than a show. It's a movement.
Okay.
It is a movement. Like, and them being a part of that show and me having conversations with them in between, it's because they're a part of the movement.
Okay.
They are a part of the jazz revolutionary movement. So that is how I connect with them and making them feel a part of the movement. Because someone has come up to me after the show and said, I really feel a part, you know, like I feel connected. So
incredible. Great.
Yeah, so you want them to feel that. You know, I don't think you should want them to feel just a part of the show for that night, you know, because it's a movement. It's a lifestyle, you know.
I totally agree, and I think it's important to connect with your audience, because if there's no connection, then you've lost them. And I've been in front of some people where I was totally lost.
Yeah, well, see, I had trouble with that when I first, you know, started performing. You know, like I was scared to death.
and that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, I didn't want to do it. And I'm not ashamed of standing. You know, I did not. I mean, I hated it all to perform. I didn't want to stand up and play for nobody. Like, I figured if you want to hear it, just go buy the record. You know, that was my thinking at first. You know, but to make them feel a part of the movement, you got to stand there in front of them. You got to play the music that they want to hear, and you got to make them feel a part of the movement. That's how you connect with them.
And that's how you keep them.
That's how you keep them, right?
That's how you bring them back.
Yeah, there's only like, you know, maybe one jazz artist I know that doesn't really perform and still can sell records, you know.
Okay. All right. Well, okay.
Be right in front of that. Of course, I ain't going to call no name.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no, we won't do that. But I'll just say that, you know, you see it's one out of many, right?
Yes.
The rest of us got to be right in front of the people for them to stay with us and, you know, to still feel the part. You got to be right there in front of them.
You well, I'm glad you learned that and got over your fear, because you want the following. You regardless to the state of jazz, your core audience will follow you, especially if you make the connection and you've bonded with them. Jazz lovers are loyal. They're loyal. There may not be, yes, they're loyal. There may not be a ton of them, but they're loyal. And when they love what you do and when you're giving them what they need and what they want, they will follow you. And that's just a fact. So that's a good thing. So
it's true. It's very true. They will. They will follow you.
Let's talk about endless possibilities, because you've had a lot of time performing, and showcasing that. Lately, where is the most memorable place you've been thus far? You tell me where you've been that you love the most and why.
You know what? I think Dubai. I think when I went there to perform, I was over there for 2 weeks. And you know what? It's just the way they embrace the music. You know, it's totally different. Like, they show, I mean, it's really more of a respect thing, I think. You know, people think that while you're up playing and nobody's saying nothing, like we do in the U.S., you know, while we're playing over here, somebody's, ooh, and clapping and saying, you go, boy, or, you know, you were bad, you know, so, so that's what we're used to over here, but you automatically think, you know, when you perform over there and nobody's saying anything, and at the end of the song, there's this big applause. And the biggest grins on these people's face, well, then you're like, okay, well, they got it. But it's really more of a respect thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
that we're not going to interrupt you while you're, you know, doing your thing. Or so I get it, you know, and I love it over there. I mean, just, you know, to see so many different cultures, you know, really embracing the music that we love, you know, here. It was an awesome thing to see. So,
well,
I gotta say, that's probably one of my favorite places.
I've never been there, but even though I've never been there, I'm still gonna say that's one of my favorite places that I've never been. But I would, I would imagine that if I were to go, I would probably come back saying, I want to go back. Now, your single Between Us features Michael Steve on trumpet. Now, why was this song chosen as the single?
You know what? I think it had the, honestly, I think it just really had the best appeal for the first single. The groove, the hook, you know, it was just one of those radio songs, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of know off the bat, okay, yeah, they're going to embrace that. So, and it's good to have an ear to know what they want, too, you know.
Yes, yes.
You can't just make a whole record of different stuff and not ease them into it. You know, you can't just give it all at them and just throw it and say, okay, here, play this. You know, you got to ease them into it, you know, so... You got to still give them a little bit of what they want, you know, and then ease them into the oven. Say, hey, check this out. See how you like this.
Exactly. Well,
you know, so that's the way to do it.
Okay, and you collaborated with so many phenomenal artists. You know, Steve Cole, Tim Bowman, Vincent Ngala, who I saw recently, and I thought this young man is incredible. Steve Oliver and Julian Vaughn, Marcus Anderson, of course, and vocalist Lynn Fidmont. Now, there's a whole lot of talent on this one CD, including yourself. So what was it like having the opportunity to collaborate with so many different fine artists on this project?
It was so great. it was really great. Well, I knew I wanted to have a whole bunch of people on this record, right? You know, so first I did A Journey of One, and it was really A Journey of One. That's why I named it that, because nobody did anything on the record but me. You know, I played every part, you know, on the keys, and I wanted it to be that way purposely, you know, so people could see, you know, or other artists could see what I could do production-wise, you know, for work and, you know, things of that sort. So I did the first CD intentionally like that.
Right.
But for the second one, I said, okay, I really got to, you know, add some people that I've been listening to for a while. Like Steve Cole is one of my idols.
Love him. Love him.
I love Steve Cole. And I think his tone is, like, one of the best sax tones in jazz. But anyway, him, Tim Bowman on guitar, I've been listening to him for a long time. So he's, you know, I'm a big fan of his, and Steve Oliver, I've been listening to him for a while. So I don't know, I just wanted to kind of, you know, grab some of the people that I had been listening to for a long time, and even some of the new ones that I have up there, you know, they're the ones that are next in this thing. So I wanted to do something with them, you know. Like Julian and Marcus and Vincent, and I just think it was great to have a mixture of seasoned and new.
True. I that was a very good concept, which brings me to my next question, which is kind of, was there a concept, or were you thinking ahead when, you know, you open up the CD with Please Don't Say No? And that, you know, that sort of brings the CD to life. It kind of, you know, it opens the door, as you say, it lays the groundwork. And then you end it with the beautiful Tatiana. Was that a preconceived concept you had to kind of open it one way and close it this way? Or did it just happen like that?
You know what? Honestly, it really just fell into place like that.
Okay.
I don't really ever go into making a record with a concept. I did the first record that way because, and not really not the music part, but just the fact that I wanted to do everything alone. That was the only concept I had with that record. But for this one, I honestly just made music.
Okay.
And I put it in a playlist of iTunes and said, and I titled the playlist CD songs. And I maybe had like 18 in there that were, you know, possibles. And what I, even the way I named the songs end up kind of looking like a concept, you know. And it's good that it looked that way because it was kind of like a theme almost. But, you know, it really wasn't, you know, planned. It just actually happened that way. And on down to even the way the songs were named, you know, so.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of weird. Nobody's ever asked me that, but, you know.
I made you think, didn't I?
About that one, but, you know, I'm glad you asked that. It's a cool question. But, yeah, it really wasn't a concept. It was just, you know, I wrote the songs and put them in that playlist and picked the ones that, you know, I wanted to go on the record, the ones that I felt, you know, were the best to you know, fit the CD requirements. And I am glad that I opened it up with something very strong and ended on a softer note.
Yes, yes, you did. I like that. See, I noticed that. See there, you have to remember that now, Nick. Okay, so overall, if you could, in a couple of words or a sentence, describe what this project means to you.
Change.
Wow.
Yeah, I'll say change. Not really change for the genre per se, but just change for me. It is a different production style from the first one. The first one was a little more, when you go back and listen to the first one and you listen to the second one, I think, you know, people have really heard the growth, and it almost makes me wish I would have named the song that change. It was a big change for me. I learned a lot, you know, in the production process of the second one. You know, I was talking to different producers and seeing, okay, how do I do this? How do I do that? And there were things I learned on it that I didn't really know for the first one. So I think, you know, that sums up, you know, the process the best, the word change.
Oh, and I like that. Metamorphosis, change. Change is good.
Yeah.
Now, as my surprise I had for you, I asked Brian Simpson a couple of days ago to describe you as an artist. Now, I love Brian Simpson. We all know that he is fabulous at what he does. He is good at what he does. And this is what Brian had to say about you, Nick. He said, Nicholas is the best young songwriter of contemporary jazz that I've come across in the last several years. And he will definitely play a huge part in the future.
Oh, wow. That is huge.
That is a quote, my friend, a quote.
Wow. Yeah, well, shout out to you, Brian, for that. Brian is a great friend. Matter of fact, he was in Dubai with us when we went. And me and him had a lot of time to really just, you know, commune with each other on a personal note, up close and personal note, and he's just the most kind-hearted person I know in the genre, and the hardest working person, actually, you know, apart from doing his own shows, he's out there on the road with Dave Cobbs and
everybody,
countless other acts. I mean, he's probably played for everybody in jazz.
I do believe, and that's what I, when I interviewed him, I found that out, and I said, wait a minute, and now you're going to be musical director over this Smooth Jazz Cruise over all those artists. Really? He's
he's doing his thing. I mean, there's probably not one person that he hasn't played for that's of note that, you know, that all the people know, you know. And,
yet his own project is hot.
Oh, well, yeah, well, I appreciate that. I played a little small part in it.
I do believe. I think I recall possibly hearing something like that.
Yeah, we had fun. You know, a lot of that production took place in, like, 2011. That was, like, some news that I got from Marcus Anderson, who was friends with Brian before I actually started working with Brian. And Marcus is... And so thank you, Marcus, actually. Marcus was the first one that told Brian about me.
Okay.
Yeah, you told him there's this kid in Goldsboro. I was fresh out of high school then. I had just matter of fact, on my graduation night, after I graduated, and I was riding in the car on my way home. I was still in my cabin gown. And Marcus called and said, Brian Simpson wants to work with you.
What a gift. What a
and
gift.
And I was like, oh my God, are you serious? You know, because I've been a huge Simpson fan, you know, for a while. So I was like, oh my God, are you serious, dude? He's like, yeah. He said, so get up some very good tracks and send them over. And the first one I've ever sent Brian called me, and he was like, dude, that is it. He said, that song is amazing. He said, I already have an idea for it. And that song is Emerald City.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Emerald City on Brian's record is the first song I did for Brian in 2011.
Okay, see, what a gift. Who needs anything else? Who needs Berkeley? Who needs...
No.
I'm just playing. No. I'm just kidding. No, but what a gift. I mean, what a gift.
Thank you.
That's huge. Well, I want you to do me a favor and keep doing what you're doing, and your blessings are sure to continue to come because you're doing things in order and the way you should. So don't stop. I'm, you know, next generation. NG. I'll give you a nickname. You know, you stay true to what Brian sees in you and to what Marcus and others see in you, that your future is huge. And yeah, you will, as Brian said, you will play a huge part in what's coming in this world of jazz that as we know it today. So that's a lot of responsibility. Sorry.
Yeah, it is. But you know, people like you, really, and Terry, Mike Reynolds, you know, you guys really make it easier. Because you know, you guys constant courage, you know, and I mean encouragement really helps me get through it, you know. The fans, you know, people just like you guys that really help make it better.
Well, I know we're here for you and we'll always have your back. So I know you're busy, so get back to work. I know you have a lot to do, but I thank you so much, and it's been such a pleasure speaking with you, Nick. And I look forward to hearing a lot more. So wait a minute, tell me this. How can fans keep up with you? I mean, are you on Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff?
I am on Facebook. I am on Twitter. Nicholas Cole. You can find me at my website at www.nicholascolejazz.com. Again, that is www.nicholascolejazz.com. So make sure you go there. There's a whole bunch of pictures on the line. There's a guest book. So write in and tell me if you like the CD. Heck, tell me if you don't like the CD. All criticism is great. So.
So much. And we can look forward to something coming from you in the near future, far future, what?
Yeah. Well, actually, next year, I'll be coming out with a third record.
Okay. We'll look forward to that.
Yeah. And the title of this record is going to be Miley Cyrus.
Wow. Okay.
No, I'm just kidding.
Please don't look. I like Molly's new look. I'm not mad at Molly, but
I'm not mad at Molly.
Do you?
Molly's doing her thing.
Leave her alone. But yeah, and you and you do your non-traditional jazz covers and CD covers, and we all look forward to it. Your fans look forward to it, and we can keep track of that via your website, correct? And other like Facebook, and we can keep track of kind of where you'll be touring and performing too, right? Is that on your website as well?
Of course, yeah. Everything's on the website.
All right, Nick. Well, you have a lot of work to do, so yeah. We put a lot of responsibility on you.
You guys got to bring this thing back. I'm like, okay.
You got to hold it together. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. But guess what? You are equipped and gifted and blessed enough to do it.
Thank you so much. I really do appreciate that.
So don't you worry about it, because you know who's in control. Therefore, it's all good.
Well, that's right. That's right.
So, amen. So you just do what you do, and I appreciate it, and I will talk to you later.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Thank you, Nick. Have a good one. Bye-bye.